Nearly got a try on that left-hand side. What happened?
Oh, but I've gone up and over and bloody head over biscuit. It wasn't enough stability there for myself, but no, I was busting for a bit of meat this game. It didn't seem to work out.
Hello, cheers, and welcome to the Scrum of the Earth podcast, the weekly show for news, reviews, great interviews, and so much more all about the world of rugby. My name is David Lawrence. I'm an American rugby fan who follows the game wherever I can find it, all over the globe. If you'd like to get in touch, I'm easy to find on all your socials. You can always just drop an email to thescrumoftheearth@gmail.com. Well, we had another megaton of action this weekend, so let's get this show on the road. So, starting as always with our current updates, and it's almost baseball season for my son, for which I am very excited. As regular listeners will know, of course, I couldn't really care less about baseball in terms of actually following it. But, you know, the sight of my boy getting just better at fielding, getting better at batting, everything about it is wonderful. He's in second grade now, which means a new league for him this year. I'm told this could be a big deal because they try to slot kids into specific positions rather than just kind of letting everyone try everything. It's my understanding that kids who get put into the outfield have a pretty high rate of giving it up out of boredom. So that's definitely a fear of mine. But in the meantime, I'm just going to just try to enjoy watching him. He seemed, you know, kind of disinterested in the last couple of months, but I think it's just hard to recall like what it's like out running around and hearing the crack of the bat in the sunshine when you're in full hunkered down for the winter mode. And as soon as he went to the first little clinic that they offered a couple weeks ago, he was just right back in it. Even like later that same day, he said some of my favorite words of all time. Daddy, will you come play catch with me? Absolutely precious.
It's too good. People have to know.
Yes, Isa, it's definitely good news this week, at least for an under-10s rugby club in Devon. So quoting here from Yahoo, of all places, quote, a youth rugby club in Devon has been given £300 by police in an initiative to make use of money seized from criminals. Devon and Cornwall police said they had awarded Newton Abbott's under-10s rugby group the money to fund a new gazebo. The gazebo would protect players from weather conditions at matches across the county, the force said. How could it be across the county? Are they picking it up and moving it? Anyway, Inspector James Johnson said it was, quote, wonderful, unquote, to be able to help the club. He said, quote, not only does the rugby club offer young people a chance to grow their passion for sport, but it's also an outlet for them to learn essential life skills outside of school in a fun, informal setting. The nonprofit club has been one of the largest junior attendees, teaching over 300 young people aged 5 to 18, being able to reinvest money from crime and use it to support a club that has a positive impact on the lives of so many young people in our community is wonderful, unquote. Club under-10s coach Matt Pomeroy said, Newton Abbott under-10s would like to say a massive thank you to Devon and Cornwall Police for our new gazebo. We're looking forward to watching some quality rugby from our new and dry gazebo. It'll be a fantastic addition to the squad and will really help keep teams dry and out of the weather and ready for some great rugby, unquote. Police teams in Devon and Cornwall regularly award grants to a range of projects, charities, and groups from local food banks to volunteer training, unquote. So I loved this little story. I'm obviously a sucker for this kind of stuff, but I also think I might have just set the record for saying the word gazebo out loud. So, you know, I've got that going for me. Moving on to thoughts of the week, and this week I was thinking about the origin of the term wooden spoon, as it was the final week of this week's Six Nations. So quoting here from Cardiff Journalism, quote, when and where did the tradition of the wooden spoon originate? It is believed that the first known use of a wooden spoon as a tool dates back to the Iron Age, but the tradition... That's good journalism, guys. But the tradition of awarding it to a last place competitor is much more recent. The origins of the tradition lie at Cambridge University during the 19th century. When students received their degrees, classmates would hang a wooden spoon behind the individual with the lowest pass mark. This would also be presented to the individual. Over the years, the spoon itself became increasingly oversized until it eventually resembled an oar, as seen in a picture you can find if you follow the link in the show notes. So, however, the term and tradition stuck and have become common parlance in sporting circles, with it being awarded to teams who finish in last place. The wooden spoon within sports is normally figurative, but not always. There is no physical wooden spoon in sports such as tennis, rugby union, or in Australia's NRL. However, in America's Major League Soccer, the lowest-ranked team receives a physical trophy named the Anthony Precourt Memorial Wooden Spoon Award. The current holders are Washington, D.C.'s United. I had no idea about that. Oh, that's because it's soccer. So the wooden spoon is not held with the same badge of honor as the Lanterne Rouge is in the Tour de France, despite their similar sentiments. The lantern is awarded to the final rider over the finish line. Riders would actively compete for the honor, in some cases hiding behind outhouses in order to ensure they finished last. In rugby, the team that finishes bottom of the Six Nations Championship is said to win the wooden spoon. Okay, and here I actually have to depart from the article text because it's actually from last year. So it was talking about both teams still looking for their first wins, etc. So to sum it up, to date, Italy have finished bottom in 18 of the 23 tournaments they have competed in since they joined in the year 2000. Wales' last wooden spoon was in 2003, and they've had it awarded four times in the Six Nations era. France and Scotland have each earned it once, while England and Ireland have managed to avoid it entirely. It's hard to imagine in 2024, but if you look at the complete history, including home nations and five nations, Ireland have won it the most, getting the unwanted utensil 25 times. Wow. So it looks very likely to me that Wales would break that 21-year hiatus on Super Saturday this year. But we've seen some crazy things already this year, right? So why don't we just get right to it? Okay, that brings us to our reviews, and this week we've got to start with the final weekend of this year's Men's Six Nations Tournament, which meant Wales, they were at home for Italy, Ireland were hosting Scotland, and of course France were taking on England. I took a lot, look at some stats in the lead-up, and I found a few interesting tidbits before things kicked off. So first off, heading into Saturday, Italy had more tackles than all the other teams by a wide margin. Their 756 was a full 130 more tackles than the next highest total for Wales, who had 67 more than the next closest team, Scotland. Leading the way for them was, of course, Michelle Lamaro, racking up an incredible 82 tackles through the first four rounds. Wow. But the numbers I found sort of funniest, I guess, were in the kicking department. So Finn Russell led the men's Six Nations with 70 kicks coming into this weekend. The next closest person was just over half that number. Tomas Williams had 38. But the amazing part was, tied with Williams was another Scottish player, Ben White. I was blown away to see one team with two of the top three players. Incredible. The potentially sad stat, of course, was Scotland were second in tries, second in points, yet came into the final weekend in third place and could potentially fall to fifth. Yikes. So, Saturday morning, where I am, it was Wales, back at the Principality for Italy, who were looking to get a rare feat, two consecutive wins in this tournament. Over their history of 32 matches before Saturday, Wales had won 28, lost 3, and drawn once, way back to 2006. But I had a feeling things were about to change. So, cards on the table. Some people at the Free Jacks game, which I'll get to later, they told me the result in this one before I had a chance to watch it, but I guess that's the risk you take. So anyway, so Wales, they were shut out in the first half. So while they did outscore their guests 21-13 in the second half, that still left them three shy. And with a 21-24 win, Italy finished off their best result in this tournament. As far back as I can recall, I think it's probably ever. Two of Wales' three tries came in the final 3 minutes as well. The Azzurri perhaps, you know, taking their foot off the gas once they knew it was kind of in the bag. Montiuani, he had a great try just before the end of the first quarter. That guy is a weapon. Warren Gatland spoke after the loss for Wales, saying, quote, "We're finding it pretty painful. We didn't help ourselves in that first half. We didn't get enough momentum. That's a lesson for us. We were a bit lateral and allowed them to defend us pretty easily. We knew the inexperience we had in the squad, and players were asking to step up into leadership roles. We have to learn from it, take the good moments out of the game, and show what good looks like. I can't question the effort of the boys. They've given us everything in this campaign. Well done to Italy. They managed the game very well. I'm really excited about this group. I think they will learn from this and improve from the experiences." Unquote. Listening to Scrum 5 this morning, I got a better sense of just how devastated the fans must feel right now. The episode was titled Rock Bottom, after all, and not a lot of laughs in this episode. So all signs, of course, point to Gatland remaining at the helm through the 2027 World Cup. But even they, you know, even if they wanted to give him the heave-ho, I don't know where they'd find the money at this point. Anyway, if you're looking for silver linings, I suppose Cam Winnett and Sam Costello might come to mind for a couple. As Gareth Rhys-Owen said, it surely can't get any worse, though saying that out loud doesn't seem particularly wise given the recent history. So definitely got to point out kudos to Italy. The scenes of the players celebrating at the end were amazing. It's a heck of a turnaround from the team we saw in the Netflix documentary even. I even think it's reasonable to project that they could do even better next year. And with what I've heard about their under-20s program, this really could be the green shoots we've been hearing about for so long. Congratulations, Italy. In the middle slot on Saturday, we were off to the Aviva to see just how angry Ireland would be after getting sideswiped last weekend as they took on Snakebit Scotland. If you're listening, I feel sure you already know it was another disappointing day for Scottish fans. In the couple days since, I've heard all the clamor about needing to get rid of Gregor Townsend. So thank you to everyone for finally coming around to the position I've been holding for like a year and a half now. When you look up at the makeup of this Scotland team, I mean, they're just so good, but the results aren't there. It's an absolute travesty that an all-time great group of players might never realize that potential. As I've been saying, that has to come down to the coach. These players, you can see it. They're not inspired. There's nothing interesting happening. Week in and week out, they underperform. They fall victim to the same missteps, and they consistently fail to come through when it matters. This time, to be fair, I really expected Ireland to utterly whoop Scotland. So in a way, you know, on paper, it's not such a terrible result, but I swear that somehow actually feels worse. Like if the final score had been 35-7, I'd be like, yep, saw that coming. But the fact that they still had a shot at the end and again couldn't come through, I don't know. It's just an awful, awful feeling. How often are they going to come across the likes of Doohan and Finn at the top of his game? You know, this has been at least two straight years of unacceptable failure. The fact that Townsend beat England several times, I think, glossed over people's selective memories and obscured the bigger picture, which is one of mediocrity. Something needs to change in Scottish rugby, but it's really hard to have much faith in the SRU, who seem permanently preoccupied with suing the people responsible for their losing ways rather than looking for real reasons and real solutions. Final score in Dublin, 17-13, and Ireland have come away tournament winners with the second place match to follow. Oh, congrats, Ireland. Finally, France were in Lyon trying to bring back some of the glimmer and glamour that they had lost ever since their disappointing exit in the World Cup, taking on an England team that seems to have everyone utterly confused. This one turned out to be perhaps the best game of the tournament, at least for me. It had everything, multiple lead changes, tons of drama, and best of all, England lost. Nolan Legarrick. It was huge for the hosts. Their first two tries made possible through some sort of brilliance we're coming to expect from the 21-year-old. And of course, Gael Ficou, he was a standout as well. His try just before the final quarter appearing to put the lid on for good. England refused to be vanquished so easily, however, and even I have to admit how impressive the play was that led to Tommy Freeman's try with maybe 5 minutes to go. But Thomas Ramos, I mean, what can you say? When it was all on the line, he just calmly slotted the winning points, crushed the spirit of the visitors, who looked honestly as stunned as I can ever recall a team looking. Oh, well, okay, maybe Ireland in the World Cup quarterfinal. I sincerely don't know what to make of this England team right now. It felt like every time I expected nothing, they showed us something. And the exact opposite was true in equal measure. Are they building? Are they stagnating? It feels like two people could each put together two different highlight reels from this tournament, make either of those arguments convincing. But my general sense is that fans are becoming increasingly happy with the job Borthwick has been doing. So for me, it was a magical night in Lyon, some sort of redemption for a French team that appeared to be too devastated by their own quarterfinal defeat to recover for this tournament. Final score, an incredible 33-31, and a dramatic final curtain for this year in the men's Six Nations. Great stuff. Okay, swinging all the way down to Super Rugby Pacific, it was already round 4 of 15. We'd already seen some crazy results this season, so you had to wonder what was in store this weekend. The biggest talking point had been the resurgence of Australian teams, though, you know, Western Force fans might not be feeling too excited just yet. So the weekend kicked off with your vote for the game of the week in Super Rugby Pacific. It was the Crusaders, back home in Christchurch to face a hot Hurricanes team who came in sitting at the top of the table as the only team to be 3-0 in the early season. As I talked about last week, Crusaders, they hadn't started a season 0-3 since 1996, so it was a must-win for them in a lot of ways. They continued to have injury woes crop up, though. Scott Barrett out for something like 6 weeks, so they had their work cut out for them. The conditions were, as the Kiwis like to say, filthy, and both teams had a lot of trouble with handling errors. It was never going to be a high-scoring contest. The Canes struck first, but that was the only scoring in the entire first half. You could kind of feel the tension slipping into the Crusaders' demeanor as the pressure of being 0-3 and shut out in the first half started to bear down on the players. They missed a fairly easy kick that would have gotten them on the board, but finally, around 50 minutes, they did get an answering try, tied it up, and went ahead by 3 in the final quarter. But Hurricanes, however, they weren't done. They capitalized on some poor discipline, and not normal for the Crusaders, to go down to 14 players and then burst through for a go-ahead score with only a couple minutes left. The home team had run out of answers, coughing up possession and seeing another player sent off after the final hooter had already sounded. A bit of a shocking performance by the perennial league leaders. Your final score was 10-14. The unbeaten Hurricanes had just shown them into uncharted territory, as the Crusaders had never started a season 0-4 in the entire storied history of their franchise. How fast the fans might turn on their new head coach remains to be seen, but woof, not fun times in Christchurch. Then we were onto the Rebels hosting the Reds. They highlighted Taniela Tupou in the lead-up. I just love that guy. He's obviously an amazing player, but I love that in every picture of him you see, he's like making a fearsome face, he's snarling, he's showing off, he's looking tough as nails. But by all accounts, he's the goofiest guy on the planet. Some of his little prank videos are beyond hysterical. What a character. Unfortunately, they would need a lot more than character today as they went down big 7-33 at halftime and 26-50 by full time. Another disappointing day in Melbourne. It's one of those weird things where their total would have beaten almost any other team this entire weekend, but they just happened to be up against the team that dropped 50, you know? So Western Force versus Moana Pacifica was next. The Force were coming in with a 5-game losing streak dating to last season, but they chose to leave Nick White out of the match day 23, which potentially seemed like a mistake, depending on how you feel about him at this stage. Ill discipline cost them as well, giving away a yellow card and finding themselves down 7-12 at halftime. Moana, they pulled further ahead off a try by Sikope Kepu, his first try in Super Rugby since 2018. And, you know, that was pretty much all she wrote. The Force going down for a sixth consecutive time this week in front of a sparse home crowd. It was 14-22. My Highlanders, they were back in Dunedin to welcome the Brumbies. All three guys on comms predicted a win for the home team, which made me incredibly nervous. So not a ton of scoring in the first half, partially due to some ferocious defense by Falau Fakatava, of all people. Quote, not many halfbacks look to put in big hits on bigger blokes, unquote, they said, but he was all about it. It was 11-7 at the break, but the speedster, Corey Toole, got in for an embarrassing try early in the second half. I mean, he's ridiculously fast, but the way players were falling off tackles, it was really bad. The Highlanders, they regained the lead entering the final quarter, but it was short-lived. It was the Brumbies getting their first win over my guys in New Zealand in 11 years. Sam Gilbert kicked a penalty to salvage a losing bonus point out of it, but just as I feared, tough times for the Highlanders this year. 21-27 was your final score. The Brumbies absolutely ecstatic. Next up, we headed to the Waikato for the Chiefs, who were hosting the Fijian Drua, and it was a 7-player change for the home team, smarting after last week's loss to the Reds. Early on, they mentioned that the Drua have the best record in terms of scrums won this season, but it was kind of a bit confusing. They showed that it was 13-13 on the screen, but while they were showing that graphic, the comms were telling us it was 27-27. Is that even possible this early in the year? So the visitors scored first. By the reaction from the crowd, you would have assumed they were actually the home team. It was incredible and a bad omen for the Chiefs. But of course, they answered right back. We were on pace for a 56-all draw. However, a few small errors by the guests allowed the Chiefs to pull ahead by the break 24-17, and they piled on with a beautiful try on the left wing early in the second 40. By the way, a week or two ago, I said something along the lines of, I'm not sure Damian McKenzie is at his best playing 10, and he's pretty well proved me wrong this season. The fizz he's getting on his passes, it's next level. He was on fire again in this one. Entering the final quarter, he already had 13 points, 6 carries, and 6 defenders beaten. And he just appears to be in total control out there. It took the Ndrua a full half hour to get any second half points. And by then, it looked like the ship had sailed. The Chiefs really clicking as the game went on. It was another yeoman-like performance by Luke Jacobson, All Black and brother of Mitch Jacobson, who will be back with my Free Jacks in just a couple of weeks. Kemu Velatini got a final try for the visitors after the clock had gone red, but it was the Chiefs' night once again, coming up big at home 46-29. It's worth mentioning, another standout performance by Isaiah Armstrong-Ravula. Definitely keep an eye on this kid. He has got something special. And finally, the Waratahs. They were back home in Sydney for the Blues, and I have to start with this. So they were doing the setup shots of the crowd before the game started, kind of highlighting like the different types of fans and, you know, particularly the kids. This one kid was beasting some chocolate ice cream and it was just all over his face. And I realized they'd accidentally done an homage to the Seinfeld episode where George gets shown on TV during a Mets game with ice cream and hot fudge absolutely pouring down his face. It was just a tiny tad too funny to be mean. I really appreciated that. Either way, as the comms said, this was a Blues team lousy with All Blacks, but the vibes were all positive at Allianz Stadium. The Tahs came out with a ton of energy. The Blues kept shooting themselves in the foot. Their hosts had a narrow 3-0 lead as we rounded the half-hour mark. But Tuonga Fassi found a blade of grass, as the comms put it, to get his team on the board with their first lead of the night. It was a great moment right at the three-quarter-hour mark when they went up to Vern Cotter, the new Blues coach, and at one point they asked, so, what do you think of Super Rugby? And his reply was a quiet laugh. And I mean, it's not easy, is it? So the Taz got within 2 points with a final minute to play. Shouldn't have been that close, but Perafetta had a horror show off the boot for the visitors. The restart didn't go their way, and it was two consecutive two-point losses for the Waratahs, 10-12 this time, and it felt like a huge missed opportunity. Wow. So while we're still down in that part of the world, and I hinted at it a week or two ago, but Super Rugby Aupiki was also back in action this weekend for round three. A quick overview. So this is year three of this competition. It's just four teams, so it's pretty easy to follow. The teams are the Chiefs Manawa, who are part of the Chiefs organization, obviously. The Blues Women, same obvious connection. The Hurricanes Pua, again, you can probably do the math. And Matatu, they're a team, they're sort of a combined regional team between the Highlanders and the Crusaders. So in year one, Chiefs Manawa defeated the Blues Women to grab the inaugural title. Last year, Matatu won by handing the Chiefs their first loss of the entire season. This year, coming into round three this week, the Chiefs were again undefeated. The Blues and the Hurricanes were 1-1, and the reigning champs were struggling at 0-2. So this weekend, the Blues Women were home to face the Hurricanes Pua, and the Chiefs Manawa welcomed Matatu to the FMG Stadium in Waikato. In the first match, I mean, woof, it was devastation. The Blues completely crushed their guests. It was a shocking 52-5, just a complete table flip from last weekend when the Blues lost at home and scored only 10 points, while the Pua were busy this week crashing back down to earth after their 36-point showing in the prior round. In the second match, the Chiefs remained the only unbeaten team on the year, winning 38-22. That leaves them atop the table with the Blues right behind. Hurricanes Pua have one win, and Matatu are still in the hunt for a W. Looks like a potentially tough season to back up that championship. Okay, back here at home in the MLR, my Free Jacks were again home to host 2-0 NOLA. It was a pretty nice day at Fort Quincy, which is a shock during the month of March. It was unsurprisingly here in Greater Boston, our St. Patrick's Day Festival. My partner and I were, again, decked out in our utterly absurd costumes, so I ended up getting two good uses out of my inflatable leprechaun, so I have retired him and will need to come up with something new next year. In any event, we were really slow getting anything going. NOLA got the first try of the day from Filimone, who, you guessed it, we traded to them, a move I'm increasingly coming to question. They had us down 14-0 in the second quarter, and that was after muffing two penalty kicks, so it looked like they had all the momentum in the world. It was a beautiful moment around the 50-minute mark, though. Reese McDonald sort of plucked one away from Dougie Fife, another player we let them have, but I'm not as worried about that move. John Poland, he had to come off with some sort of arm injury. I know he was spotted with a sling later on, according to Brian Ray, but I don't have any news about that just yet. Hopefully it's not a big deal. We really need that guy. So two penalty kicks in a row by Jason Patras put us up 6 with a quarter hour to go. We added a try to secure the victory, but some soft defense right at the death allowed them to nab a length of field try of their own to wrest a losing bonus point out of the contest. That was how things would end. A great day, a great festival, another W for the hometown team, handing the gold their first loss of the year, 27-21 in Quincy. Next up, DC Old Glory were in the Soccerplex, a name that totally cracks me up, to take on the Second City Pupsters, and it ended up being the first draw of the season. It was 22-all by the end. Bit of a weird start for both these teams. Utah, they were back in suburban Salt Lake City to face a surging Seattle Seawolves team. Wow, there's a lot of S's. And it did not go well for them. Seattle winning again 13-23. San Diego faced their sunshine rivals from Los Angeles, and it was so close, so close. The Bellends almost getting their first win against a powerful Legion team, but San Diego just managed to squeak by 19-18 at the Snapdragon, which, in case you hadn't heard, will host this year's MLR final. The Thundercats were home from Miami, continued to show good form, the Sharks remaining winless as Houston rolled 30-19. Last but not least, the stupidly named Anthem were back in the Carolinas for the Dallas Jackals, and whew, I don't think there's been a blowout like this since we went up and basically ended the Toronto Arrows as an entity. It was a colossal 28-68, pantsing, a massive result for an impressive Dallas team, and another tough day for the new kids on the block. So after these three rounds, over in the Western Conference, we've got four teams in double digits. We've got Houston at the top, one table point ahead of Seattle, who are 1 point ahead of Dallas, who are 1 point ahead of San Diego. Over here in the East, my Free Jacks have assumed their rightful place at the top, with NOLA kind of nipping at their heels. This coming week, tomorrow, in fact, I'll be having a chat with Alex Magleby, the CEO of the reigning champions. And then next week, after four rounds are in the books, I'll be checking in with the lovely Phil Harris, the man behind the Jack's Rangers podcast, to get his thoughts on the first quarter of the season. So, as always, lots more to look forward to. By the music, you'll know it's time for this week's Diamond in the Ruck Award, and this week, the award goes to Thomas Ramos. Monsieur Ramos, your clutch kick with almost no time remaining put a dagger in the hearts of the visiting side and provided a fittingly thrilling end to a roller coaster of a tournament. When you're on your game, you are just automatic, and even with all that pressure, I felt 100% sure that final kick was going through. Thomas Ramos, congratulations to you, for you are this week's Diamond in the Ruck. Well done, monsieur. Okay, that brings us to our updates and previews, and there is a lot. Once again, we are back to a massive string of concurrent competitions. So for a change, I'm going in alphabetical order. Yeah, mixing it up. So here at home in the MLR, Friday will feature Seattle hosting Houston. Ooh, that's a really good matchup. On Saturday, DC hosts San Diego. Miami are home for the stupidly named Anthem. So it looks like, you know, barring a second draw this year, that one of the new teams will get their first ever victory. After that, Dallas are back home for NOLA. On Sunday, Chicago, they're home to take on my Free Jacks. And then finally, it'll be LA versus Utah. In the Premiership in England, we've got Friday games. We've got Bristol versus Northampton and Leicester versus Gloucester. That's followed on Saturday by Exeter versus Newcastle. Oh, God, Exeter at home. Won't be watching that. And then Saracens versus Harlequins. That's the other Saturday game. That should be really good. Round 13 finishes off with Bath versus Sale on Sunday. In Super Rugby Aupiki, we'll have the Hurricanes Pua back at home to face the Chiefs women. That one's actually at 11:30 on Thursday night where I am. And then at the same time, Friday night, it'll be the Blues facing Windless Matatu. In Super Rugby Pacific, we're already getting to the end of the first third of this year's competition. That'll be Hurricanes versus the Rebels, the Brumbies versus Moana Pacifica, the Andrua versus the Waratahs, Chiefs versus Highlanders. Oh, jeez. The Blues will take on the Crusaders, and the Western Force will face the Reds. In the top 14, we're back to our usual 6-1 split. The early Saturday game will be Toulon versus Montpellier. The four middle games will include Cast versus Racing, Oyonnax versus Perpignan, Clermont versus Pau, and Stade Francais versus Lyon. The Saturday evening game will be Bayonne versus La Rochelle. And then Sunday, my Border Beagles will be at home to face Toulouse in a huge match to close out round 19 in the top 14. And then finally, in the URC, it's round 12, which means on Friday, Glasgow versus Cardiff and Ospreys versus Munster. Saturday brings us the Sharks versus Ulster, Scarlets versus Benetton, the Stormers versus Edinburgh, Connacht versus the Lions, Dragons versus the Bulls, and Zebre versus Leinster. Oh, man, I already missed the URC. It doesn't take long. Well, my friends, that does it for another week. That's 139 consecutive weeks, just in case you're keeping score. I honestly don't know if I'm more excited for the return of all these major competitions next weekend or more terrified at the prospect of trying to keep track of it all, especially with baseball season looming for my son. Either way, I will not be lacking for things to watch in the coming weeks. So, to all of you across the globe, cheers, talk to you soon, and be well.
It gives me great pleasure to be here today.
Oh, it does, neat.